Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, Julia Fellow and Adam Roberts.
With everything going on and the crisis in the Middle East, what do wars do to our mental health? What does it do specifically to our brain? We're very lucky to have with us high-performance brain specialist, coach, and consultant, Dr. Lee Richardson. She is the founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas, Texas. Thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you for having me.
What do you think is happening to people who are watching over and over and over what's going on with the war in Iran?
Well, you know, constant exposure through media or social platforms can overwhelm the brain. And the brain has a filter that it normally uses so that it can limit how much distressing information that we can process at one time. But when it's constant, then we're not able to, you know, to turn that filter on. And we're not able to process it. And it leaves us in an overwhelmed state.
Is it basically dissociating? That's what I was just talking to my doctor about this and what's been going on in her practice.
Well, you know, I look at it a little bit differently. I think the brain will try to put things in its special compartment. And that allows us to, to protect ourselves. And so that we want to stay informed, we want to know what's going on, but we don't want to know so much that we worry about it. And you think back to the pandemic days, we all stayed in a constant state of alert.
What's the long-term effects when the brain is in the middle of that?
Well, when the brain is in the middle of that, we lose our ability to regulate. And the brain's got its built-in threat detector, and that's the amygdala. And when you have prolonged stress activation over and over again, boy, that brain just hits the amygdala button, and the prefrontal cortex, that's the part of your brain where you make rational decisions, it doesn't have a chance to react, and it's not in charge. And when the emotional response takes over, then we sense we're in personal danger, and that just puts our stress system in a constantly activated state.
Also, let's talk about our armed forces. I mean, we've learned that there are 6 American soldiers that were killed, 18 wounded, 4 out of the 6 have been identified. What does that do for veterans of war and current military?
Well, and I've worked with veterans, and many of them have been deployed many times. And I think that once you think, oh, I'm going to be deployed again, it puts you in a stressful state. We have all kinds of memory. We have emotional memory. We have visceral memory. We have auditory memory. And maybe they flash back to what happened the last time they were deployed, or they flash back to a time when they actually lost somebody. And that puts them in a highly activated state. And when you're highly activated, you're not rationally thinking. You're reacting. And that reaction can be impulsive. It can be overreaction, but it's not with intent, and it does not help your ability to execute.
What can we do to make sure our brains stay healthy during this time?
Well, I think that we have to realize that we can put in place some emotional boundaries, that when the brain can create these boundaries so that people can, because it's important to be able to be empathetic and to protect your own mental well-being. And emotional trauma and stress, that creates dysregulation. And when that brain gets dysregulated, those protective emotional boundaries become very fragile.
She is Dr. Lee Richardson, brain health coach and consultant, and she's the founder of the Brain Performance Center in Dallas, Texas. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
One of our most treasured locations in the state of Wisconsin had to be evacuated yesterday. Lambeau Field. It was just before our show at 3:00.
Security was calling us in.
Is this Lambeau Field?
Affirmative. It's going to be an active fire in locker room 3.
Fire alarms were blaring, but firefighters got there, prompted that evacuation, and we learned that there was no smoke or flames visible from the outside of the building. Stadium staff had already evacuated,
And what we learned was that there was a small fire in the stadium's third locker room. That's not the Packers locker room or the visitors locker room. And officials say the sprinkler system was the reason why it knocked out most of the fire even before they arrived. And according to Fox 11 in Green Bay, the crew there, the news crew, observed what appeared to be burned plastic storage bin being removed from the building. And fire officials are still working to determine the exact cause. But thank goodness for the sprinklers.
Yeah, that was one thing I took away. And yeah, if you've seen, you've likely seen the photos circulating. It does look like one of those things you take up to the attic with your old Christmas decorations. And then there's a corner of it that's burnt out, which without speculating, something must have caught fire in there. I was also saying in the newsroom when we got this breaking that this was happening, I feel for this guy here. You heard him on the police scanner.
Is this Lambeau Field?
I wonder if every single person on every single channel, when they hear that initial dee-doo-dee-doo, fire in progress at 1265 Lombardi Avenue,
yeah, that was,
and
yeah,
everyone's eyes just go, where, excuse me?
That was a Schwabenon Public Safety, and then the Green Bay Metro Fire Department arrived. Man, that was crazy. And I think about what's going on in the city of Milwaukee, that, you know, just talking about the landlords and possibly bringing in the requirement for sprinklers in apartment buildings, especially in Milwaukee's north side.
Yeah, we followed along with Alderman Peter Brigelis's legislation that moved through, and he's been working, the alderman has, closely with the Milwaukee Fire Department to push this. And it is one of those smaller pieces of legislation that could still have impact, where there were fees that a landlord would have to pay in order to retrofit in an old building a full sprinkler system. Under the legislation, those fees would be waived, which isn't nothing. It's a small something, but it's not a nothing. The real question is, and the one that the landlords, I will assume, will pose back is, still got to funnel in our water from somewhere. And for a lot of these old buildings, that's going to be a lot of water that has to funnel through.
A lot of buildings that are older, grandfathered in, where there's no sprinklers. But I mean, this is just the perfect example of how, when there's an emergency and you're not even, no one was even using this Lambeau Field locker room, there's not even a season right now, and the sprinklers made a huge difference.
It's 520 on WTMJ. Hey, speaking of Milwaukee aldermen, there was a lot of talk at City Hall yesterday about a resolution that was unanimously adopted. What could the consequences of those actions be? We'll explore next. The Milwaukee Common Council passes a symbolic resolution on Tuesday that would make official the city's opinion on immigrations and customs enforcement operations. The actions of ICE, which have drawn the ire of several Milwaukee leaders, also people in the community, namely Alderman Alex Brower. More on him in a moment. First, this legislation, which Adam Roberts here with Julia Fellow. We were talking about, Julia, on the show I co-hosted on Monday. We were talking about how this was going to be coming up and mentioning what it was and what it wasn't. Now, this resolution we're talking about, largely symbolic, as I mentioned, it states the city's official stance. We strongly condemn the actions of immigration agents, specifically in the city of Minneapolis, that led to the deaths of two individuals, Renee Good and Alex Preddy. We also strongly encourage the abolishment, rather, of ICE as an agency. You can see why it's largely symbolic. It carries no legal weight. It's not like this is an ordinance that would be city law, like we demand ICE come up.
Right.
That's not what this is.
But words are powerful.
They are. Now, quick side note on the legislation, it is not official yet. The mayor, Cavalier Johnson, would still need to, even though it's not a law, signal some sort of approval or disapproval. Not sure where he will lean on this, and that could come by the end of the week or next week. We don't know. But back to the resolution and the possible consequences, because as you know, every action, positive or negative, carries a consequence,
yes,
possibly also positive or negative.
Yes.
So during the hearing yesterday, this was Tuesday morning, about 10:15 to be specific, while the alder women and women were discussing this resolution, they received an email from City Attorney Evan Goyke mid-hearing and mentioned within possible consequences to this non-binding, not law, resolution. And the Alderman Brower made mention of it during the meeting.
The city attorney has said to me that this could potentially put this, adopting this resolution that calls for the abolition of ICE, could potentially put us on a list of, in Donald Trump's White House, of cities that are sanctuary cities. I am in support of us being declared a sanctuary city. I want to end up on that list. Thank you.
Now, for context, the alderman did say he did not expect that to happen from this. And currently, Milwaukee nor any other community is officially listed a sanctuary city. You may recall last year, erroneously, the Trump administration put Milwaukee and other cities on a list. That was later corrected in October. So not on that list right
but
now.
But anything, even if it's symbolic, can have consequences, which is interesting. So did you have the email of what exactly the language is of what the city attorney says? Because, you know, he's giving guidance on what could happen legally.
So here's the interesting nugget of it all. Another alderman, Scott Spiker.
There is a consequence here that goes way beyond what we might just comfortably say, you know, that's a small price to pay. If that's real, that is a real consequence of an urging that I think we all acknowledge might not actually move the feds off the dime.
So pretty strong words and definitely an indication that, hey guys, we may want to pump the brakes. Couple of things to follow up on that. I've been trying to find out what exactly is the letter of this email that would make a council member react so strongly. And so far, no one wants to talk about yet what that is. The city attorney declining to release the email under client partner confidentiality. Also, that was brought up by the council members. I've spoken to at least one source on the matter who has knowledge on this that says they would hate to see the prophecy of what this email indicates become self-fulfilling by it being broadcasted. I would argue that if there's a potential real-world impact, that people should know what that could be, considering this ordinance, I keep wanting to call it an ordinance, mm-hmm. this resolution was unanimously adopted by all the council members who were present. There were 14, one was excused. They all said, the motion carried. So you voted to make it a binding resolution. Now that could come with consequences.
I want to see this email. This is from the Milwaukee City Attorney's Office giving guidance. I mean, we put in a Freedom of Information Act request, right?
We did put a records request in. Now, how long the city takes to answer that is anybody's guess. They've typically been long with things, but we're working to effort that information. And once it comes out, we will, of course, let you know.
Iran's regime is collapsing. An earth-shattering event just took place 5 days ago with U.S.-Israeli forces taking out top leaders across Iran. Now the fallout continues across the Middle East. We're on day five, and we have ABC's Jordana Miller, who's a friend of the show. You're in Jerusalem. How are you?
I'm good. I mean, at least I'm in my living room and not in a bomb shelter. So that's good, because we've been in and out every day. Today was about five times today. So, you know, if I didn't have children, young children, then, you know, it would be easier to deal with. But it's hard when kids hear, you get like a loud alarm sound on your phone, which is like the first warning. And then you're kind of on pins and needles waiting to see if you get the next alarm that the rockets are coming, or missiles or drones are coming near your area. Then you hear the siren. And during that, you go to the bomb shelter. But now we all go to the bomb shelter, you know, after that first loud beeping sound, because it's just less anxiety provoking for my kids, you know, because then by the time we get down there, you can hear the siren a little bit. And we can turn on the iPad and play games. And like, you do still hear the loud booms of the interceptions, but you know, when you're underground, when, you know, it's less. So that's the hard part.
Yeah. And your bomb shelter is across the street, right? Every time that goes off.
Right. Right. Cause I'm in a house that has a lot of glass, and it's just, you just can't take a risk. You know, these Iranian ballistic missiles are serious, you know.
You've seen, I was watching just the other day, a separate outlet, but CNN's Aaron Burnett had to, during a live shoot in Tel Aviv, in real time, proceed from the roof of a building downstairs into an interior area. Jordana, as you've been doing these hits like you're doing with us right now, has there been a point at all where mid-hit you've had to say, hey guys, sirens are going off, we got to maneuver a bit here?
First of all, I'm a big fan of Aaron Burnett, and I used to work for CNN. Actually, used to work for Anderson Cooper and covered way back when the Second Lebanon War here. And so I'm very familiar with those on-air sirens that go off, and then you just got to pull your reporter, you know, away and hope your cameraman maybe can follow. But this morning I was in the middle of a two-way and the sirens started to go off and I had to get off. I was near actually already a safe room, but I wasn't with my children. And so I said, I got to go. I've got to check in, make sure they're okay. You never quite get used to those sirens. And now, I mean, I've heard them, you know, hundreds of times because of the war and now this war. I will say one thing that's unusual is that Iran is targeting Jerusalem a lot more during this war than they did during the 12-day war. Mm. And it's unusual because Jerusalem is, right, a mixed city, a contested capital. There are hundreds of thousands of Muslims that live in Jerusalem. All of the holy sites are here. And so usually it doesn't come under attack, but it has.
ABC's Jordana Miller is with us from Jerusalem right now. The news that's being made here back stateside, Jordana, today involves the U.S. Senate holding that initial vote on the Iran War Powers Resolution. Now, the results of which are largely symbolic. Even if it were to pass in both houses of Congress, the president could basically just veto this. But I will ask you, as someone who's in this area, even if hypothetically that is approved and fast-tracked to the president's desk, and again, hypothetically, he were have to sign on this, that doesn't mean that just immediately everything stops, right?
No. And I think, you know, from everything we've heard, not just from the president, but even on this side, from Israeli senior officials who talked to us on background, the war against the Iranian regime is going better and faster than planned, right? I mean, Israel was able in the first 24 hours to have aerial superiority over Tehran, and now in other larger parts of Iran, and they've been very, I think, effective in targeting Iran's military targets. And so if this war slowed down, there's still an incredible amount of damage that has been done. And we can see that the Iranians are having a hard time mounting what looks, you know, what would be a coherent response. They kind of seem to be shooting, you know, at all around the region. But, you know, they don't seem to have a lot of coordinated strategy. It doesn't look yet. And they're having a hard time with their command chain because the United States and Israel were so effective in taking out a whole swath of their leaders, and then, you know, even trying to disrupt the succession process with the strikes recently on the Assembly of Experts buildings. So I think even if it slows down, there's a lot of damage has been done. I mean, I don't think we've seen this kind of military prowess, I don't know, in decades, really.
My last question for you, Jordana, you've lived through more than 2 years now of war every day. Now, what we're hearing is that this is not going to be like Iraq, according to Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary. This is going to be weeks, not years. What do people on the ground in Israel believe?
The same. They think it's going to be weeks and not months and years. They are confident that the regime can be weakened enough to the point where it either the Iranians are scrambling or begging for a deal, a new deal with the United States to curb their nuclear program and maybe transition to a different kind of government, or you know, that this very intense attack on the regime would create the circumstances for millions of Iranians to go pour out into the streets and try to take their country back. I don't think we're going to get bogged down for months and months and months. And I think we see some see that Iran has made even a mistake in trying to attack some of the other partners here in other Arab nations, right? The Saudis, the Kuwaitis, Bahrain, the Emiratis. Now they've hit Turkey, right? A NATO member. So they look like, I mean, I'm not a war expert, but there's plenty of them here in Israel. And it looks like the Iranians are firing on a bit of desperation and not a coherent plan.
She is ABC's Jordana Miller. She's in Jerusalem. Thank you. I'm so glad you're safe.
Thanks, Jordana.